Hi, my name is Tomomi and I am 18 years old. Today is May 5th. 6th. May 6th. And I'm speaking with Pastor Brian Kim, who is my pastor at All Nations Church, recording this interview in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And so my first question is, can you tell me about where you grew up and what it was like?
That's a tricky question. I was born in New York City, but I grew up mostly between South Korea and New Jersey.
Okay.
I spent about 5 years on and off, moving back and forth, being shuttled around between relatives because my parents were both working full time. So I was living with my aunt and uncle over in Korea for about a year, then I'll come back for about 6 months with my grandparents. My grandmother come over, she would watch me here. And then I have to go back when her visa is over. And so I kind of grew up in Korea and New Jersey, but mostly, I don't know. I would say I grew up in between those two places.
How was it? Did you enjoy having that multicultural experience?
It was very interesting. It was a little tricky because there are times when I didn't know what language to speak.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up with mostly Korean-speaking household, and in Korea, of course, it's all Korean. But then here in America, when I would go to, first of all, kindergarten, everybody's speaking English. And so it was really tricky learning what to speak, what to say. Preschool, it was kind of a mix of both, and church was a mix of both. And so I grew up kind of confused. What kind of language to speak? What kind of person am I? And this, of course, followed me throughout adulthood too, but as an introduction to, I guess, multiculturalism, it was very interesting.
Okay, I see. Can you tell me about your relationship with your parents?
My parents, we have a pretty good relationship. They're the typical Asian parents who drive you really hard in the first few years of adolescence. Mm-hmm. They want you to get good grades and all that, and of course that produces friction for a while. But then, once you get past that kind of friction, it's pretty much smooth flowing. And right now we have a good relationship. I go visit them. I try to visit them every month. I think they're a little lonely now because there's no one in the house anymore. But it's good. We chat, we talk every week or so, and I do miss them. They're enjoying their golden years now.
That's good. Yeah.
But it's been a great relationship. I'm really thankful for my parents. They sacrificed a lot for me, and I know that's why they were pushing so hard. Because they were giving a lot and investing a lot, but now I think they've kind of given up. It's good.
In what way do you mean they gave up?
I was just kidding. They haven't given up. Maybe they gave up on me making money, but that's besides the point. They don't care about that anymore.
Do you remember a time when you were younger when they made you angry? Or opposite, or you making them angry?
Of course, they would make me angry when they would tell me to do my homework. Of course, that's a typical experience among the Asian Americans. But I think the angriest I got at them was when we had to move. We're moving from, it was in New Jersey, so it was from one town to another, but it was a large enough move where we had to actually change churches. We were moving about 30 minutes away.
Aww.
And that meant I was leaving my friend group behind. Back then, I didn't really have a lot of friends at school. I had a lot of friends at church, and that meant that I would have to leave that group behind and start all over, both in school and in church, and that was a big struggle. And I really got upset with them when they told me we had to move. I think that was the hardest for me. The hardest for them, I think the angriest I made them, was when I told them I was going to become a pastor. Because I've been going to school at UC Berkeley. It's a very expensive school, and it's very very long distance away, and they made a lot of sacrifices for me to go over there. And I've been studying to be a city planner, an architect, all sorts of big plans. And then I was originally starting off a career as a video game producer. And when I told them I'm leaving all that behind to go into ministry, they got upset.
How did they handle it? Did they eventually get over it or be okay with it?
They got over it, of course. It took a little while. It took about a year. But once they saw that I was serious, and once they saw that, you know, this is really where God was leading me, they gave in. It also helped that my brother got into business school and he started making money. So that also kind of assuaged their fears.
How old were you when you had to move towns?
It was right between elementary school and middle school. I think I was 10 or 11. I was moving up from 5th grade to 6th grade. It was a good time to move because, honestly, I'm not going to see my friends in middle school. So there's a big difference. So that, I think, it was a very formative time. It was a very difficult time, leaving all the friends behind. But at the same time, it did leave space for me to make new friends and have new experiences.
Yeah, that's good. And after that, were you still going back and forth between Korea or...
Going back and forth from Korea, that was mostly the first 5 years.
Okay.
Because, you know, I didn't really have daycare here, and they didn't want to leave me with the daycare. So they wanted me to be with family.
Yeah.
So that's why I was shuttled back and forth. After I started school, it was only for like family vacations that we would go back. Mm-hmm. Maybe every other year or every 2 years or so, just to see family.
Oh, I see. So, what were your favorite experiences from like elementary and middle school?
In elementary school, I would say my favorite experiences was it was actually Halloween. My parents let me go out trick-or-treating just once in my life. And that one time, I got so much candy, I got sick. So that was my favorite experience in elementary school. Middle school, I would say just making new friends. I made a lot of new friends in middle school, more so than even high school. So I made a lot of friends in middle school, in the school, and a lot of friends at the church too. And I really got into church starting middle school. So that was my best experience then.
That's good. Why didn't they let you go to Halloween other years?
Well, I didn't live in a very safe neighborhood, first of all, so it wasn't really the best place to go walking around as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And the second of all is our church was very conservative, and they would tell the parents not to let us go.
Yeah.
And so this one time, I had finally convinced them to let me go just once. But then I got sick from all the candy and all the sugar, so after that, they just never let me go.
What do you remember what you dressed up as?
I think I just wore a tuxedo. I think I was just wearing a suit or a tuxedo, and I was pretending to be like a composer or something like that.
How did you feel about the conservative views of your church not letting you do fun things like Halloween?
Well, at the time it didn't bother me so much because in exchange for not allowing us to go out, they would actually hold a big like celebration at the church for the kids.
Oh, okay.
And at the end, we will get a lot of candy as a result. So it's the same thing. It's just whether it was at church or going outside.
Oh, I see.
Only difference was my friends are all, you know, outside. And I was being called to the church. So that was the only real difference.
Mm-hmm.
That and there's a lot more candy outside.
Are there any funny stories your family tells about you that come to mind?
I'm not sure. I don't actually know many of the stories. So a lot of the stories are from when I was a kid. And these are stories that they tell each other during like family reunions in Korea.
Uh-huh.
So these are stories of my childhood in Korea, usually. Because that's the shared experience.
Yeah.
And I was too young. I don't actually remember too many of those.
And they never told you about them much?
I mean, they talk about it, so I overhear, but... it's usually in Korean, and my Korean's not that good. I guess one story that's told fairly often is about how I grew up with my cousins.
Yeah.
And there was one particular cousin who I fought with all the time, and they would always say that I got a scar from her, and that scar still remains. But I don't really remember that, so I don't think it counts.
Well, you were little, so...
I was very little. Like 2 years old.
Okay, can you tell me about one of your worst childhood memories besides having to move when you were in beginning of middle school?
I guess I don't know if it counts as childhood, but my worst memory would be when my cousin passed away.
Oh.
So she was 29 or 30 around then, and she had just had a baby about a year before. And then she rapidly declined because she actually was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And they diagnosed her very late, so it was very difficult. For the entire family, of course. And for me in particular, it was difficult because she actually lived in our house here in America.
Okay.
While she was attending school, and then eventually when she was dating and getting married. So she was basically my older sister. And then all of a sudden she got sick, and then she passed. So that was my most difficult, is saying goodbye to her, mm-hmm. especially towards the end.
How was that? How was that for you, like emotionally? Did that change your views in life, or?
It was definitely shocking. Definitely, I think up until that point, I had never experienced death. I never came in contact with anybody who died, because you know, in our family, we didn't have any deaths before then. Mm-hmm. I guess we were fortunate in that sense. And my parents would try to shield me from all the funerals that we would have to go to as a family. So that was my first experience with death, and it really showed me that anybody can die.
Like, yeah.
Nobody's immune, even if you're young, even if you look healthy, even if you're a very lovely person. Everybody dies.
So let me see. So are there any positive moments to like change it back to something fun, or memories from your life that you think shaped who you are today?
I mean, there's so many positive moments. And they all kind of stem from the negative moments, actually. So, you know, that experience with death really drove me to really think about, well, what's the point of life, right?
Yeah.
Especially since it's my sister, older sister, my cousin. She died so early, she died so young, and she left behind, you know, so many broken lives. And that really got me thinking. It really got me to be serious about my faith, about Christianity, about church. And as a result of my gradual more seriousness, I guess, in the church, I had some of my best experiences. One experience in particular, I went to a retreat with children. So my church back then, they would send their upper elementary students, fourth graders, fifth graders,
mm-hmm.
on a supervised retreat. They would go not very far, like 10 minutes away, 20 minutes away. And then all these teachers would come along with them and just supervise and just spend time with them, sharing about life together, and then teaching them about the Bible, teaching about God. And I got a chance to go one summer, and it was amazing to see how these fourth graders, fifth graders are all turning and just, they're really finding meaning in life at that young age. And they would say that, and they would enunciate that in their own words, and that really moved me. And I think that's one of the steps that caused me to become who I am today.
Well, little kids are wholesome, and it's...
I don't know about that. They're pretty crazy.
Okay, now to talk about like your career. You already mentioned it mm-hmm. before, but can you tell me more detail about what you do for a living?
So I'm technically a pastor. And what that means is I take care of a congregation, or I guess in my case, two groups within a congregation.
Mm-hmm.
I take care of the youth, like which are junior high students and high school students. And I also take care of what we call the English ministry, but it's really the young adults and the other English-speaking members of the community. And so what I do is I basically take care of them on Sundays, on Fridays, throughout the week, meet up with them, care for them spiritually, care for them physically too, and just love on them, teach them about God, teach them about faith, teach them about life here in America, for some of them. And in addition to that, I do a lot of work around the church. I'm tasked with basically taking care of the building, doing any miscellaneous paperwork, whatever the senior pastor assigns me to do. That's basically what I do. A big portion of my week is spent just studying the Word, studying the Bible, thinking about what to teach, what to say, how to say it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the trickiest part. There's so many things we know and I know, but it's very hard to convey that. So a lot of my time is spent just spending time with people, seeing their perspective, and then spending time in the Word and trying to connect the two together.
Pretty cool.
Doesn't sound that cool.
I think it's cool. Personally, sounds more interesting than the solitary office work, but
mm-hmm.
It's perspective. And what are some of the favorite things that you do for your job?
I really love meeting people. I'm a shy person, typically, and so it's hard for me to approach somebody just randomly.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of ministry, in the context of being a pastor, and just going out and talking to people about faith, about something that is so meaningful to me, that's actually a lot of, I can't say fun, but it's enjoyable. It's joyful. And it makes me happy. And I really love the fact that people are willing to listen, that they're willing to talk about their faith, about their lives. And the whole part is we're sharing life together. And I think that's something we're missing today. And that's something I didn't get to experience much growing up. It's not something churches did or people did back then. But I think that's something we need to start doing more.
Yeah, you never really came across as a shy person to me, but...
Yeah, I'm an introvert. I'm by nature an introvert.
But you're very good at doing the evangelical outreach and all that.
there's people who are even better. There's people much better.
Okay. What are some important lessons that your work life has taught you?
Some of the big things I've learned is prioritizing what matters. So there's a lot of things that I could be doing during the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I'm basically the person who takes care of all the technology in the building because no one else knows how to use it. But that's really a secondary matter if, say, something happens to one of the congregation members or somebody needs something. Occasionally we have members of the community, typically the homeless, who come in asking for help. And that always takes priority. And I've been learning a lot about how people are more important than things.
Yeah.
And people are more important than a lot of the things that we do around here. It's more important than buildings, more important than money. And that's what I've been learning a lot about, is prioritizing what's really important.
What is your experience like helping the homeless people in New Brunswick?
It's been a blessing, but it's also been very difficult. It's a blessing to see that, you know, what we do does matter.
Yeah.
It's also very difficult because there's only so much that we can do. And it's a little disheartening to see that people are out there all the time. No matter how many other groups are out there, no matter how many of us band together to help, there's always so much more to do. And so that's always a little difficult to see.
Yeah. How exactly did God call you to do this line of work after spending so much time in California doing totally different things?
This is a story that I tell a lot. So what happened is towards the end of my senior year, I was getting ready for all these other jobs. I was applying to dozens, if not hundreds, of companies and cities and corporations and all sorts of things. And each of them were either being completely ignored or getting rejected. And oftentimes, I mean, a lot of times people just ignore it, because back in those days, this is back in 2011, San Francisco and Bay Area, it was still at the height of the recession.
Yeah.
There was still a lot of people struggling, a lot of companies struggling, and a lot of cities were struggling too. And so there just weren't enough jobs to go around. And typically the jobs were going to people who had experience, not kids right out of college. And so it was a very difficult time, and I was a little discouraged. And one day I was walking home from class, it was towards the end, towards like April or March. And as I was coming back, I was listening to music, just ignoring all the people around me. I just wanted to get home. And we came to a busy crosswalk. It was one of the busiest on campus, crossing a relatively busy street. And as I was about to cross and I was stepping into the crosswalk, this song came on into my earphones. And it was a song called See His Love. And it was a song about, it's a Christian song, and it was a song about how God loves us and how God loves me. And I'd listened to the song many times before, but in this particular moment, as I was listening to this song, I suddenly felt this overwhelming love fill me. And this love was not for me. This overwhelming love, you know, I felt God's love before, but in this moment, I felt this love pouring out to other people. And I felt myself looking around, and there were dozens of people around me. And my heart went out to them. My heart was breaking for them, because all these people have so many needs. There's students who are struggling with finals, there's students struggling with finances, and there's people all around me who don't know that they're loved. And this really broke me, and this was the start of what I think is my call to ministry.
Yeah.
That God wants all of us to know that He loves us. That we're loved, that we're not alone. And that He wants to be with us, not just for a little while, but for all of eternity. So that's the beginning of my ministry. That's where it started.
Wow, that's amazing. So what steps did you take after that?
So immediately after that, I didn't take any steps at all. Because my instinct was to actually run away, to not go into ministry. Because I had seen my pastors growing up, and I knew how they struggled. They often struggle with money, first of all. Pastors don't make a lot of money, typically. And I also saw them struggle with people, because people don't really understand that a pastor is not really a person of authority. A pastor is a person who leads others to Jesus, leads others to God. And I saw a lot of that struggle, a lot of that pain, and I didn't want any of that. But what I did first is I told my own pastor, my college pastor, and I told some of the spiritual leaders who I trusted and who I really was close with. And each of them, they recommended that I really try it out first. So I was given an opportunity, because I was attending a very small church back then, and I was given an opportunity to go and basically take care of the college students, English-speaking college students. Mm-hmm. So we would have Bible study together, we would have prayer time together, and then we would go out and just eat and hang out together. We were all young people. And that was so much fun. People were changing, their lives were being transformed, their hearts were being transformed. Nothing had really changed physically around them, circumstantially around them, but for some reason they were happier. And I was happier, and it was a great time. And eventually, some of the pastors and some of the leaders were trying to kind of, they're basically going to force me to enter into a seminary. They're saying, you have to be a pastor, you have to go. And so they're telling me, you have to go apply to one of these schools around us, we want you here. And I thought seriously about it, but it was so expensive. And so in the end, what happened is I went to Princeton Seminary here in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. First of all, because it's close to my family. And second of all, it was free.
Oh.
Yeah, so it all worked out in the end. But those are the steps I took. I ran away. People pushed me. People pushed me more. And in the end, I gave in.
Wow, that's a pretty interesting story. It's just... So I'm so afraid of, like, choose one career and I'm stuck forever, but...
Yeah, I really don't think that's the case. Even in seminary, I knew many of my classmates. They were either in their second or third career.
Oh, I see.
So they were much... Of course, they were older than I was. They were in their 60s, some of them 50s. And they had done something for many, many years. Something they were experienced in.
Yeah.
But then they received the call into ministry, and here they are. And I know some of them are serving very powerfully, doing very wonderful ministry. So I really don't think that a career is what... I don't think a career is defined for us.
Yeah.
It may happen later, it may happen sooner, but I really think that it's not necessarily a definition. We're not forced into something.
Well, that's an important lesson to tell a lot of college students here at church. And not just tell them, but make them believe it.
That's a struggle. I mean, people have told me that in college too. And I never believed it until it happened to me.
Yeah, well, I also have a hard time believing it, even though I intellectually understand it.
Mm-hmm. But that's the struggle.
Yeah.
It's getting from the head to the heart.
Can you explain to us, because many people don't really know what seminary is, what it's like?
So a seminary is basically a professional graduate school.
Okay.
It's a school where you go to if you either want to learn more about Christianity, or there's actually Jewish seminaries too. You want to learn more about a particular religion, and you want to either serve in a professional capacity as a pastor or a priest, or if you want to be more of a supporting role, as in an NGO, a nonprofit, or some other field in that mm-hmm. sense. And so in the seminary, usually what we do is we study, I guess, the basics of our faith. So in a Christian seminary, we learn about the Bible, we learn about God, we learn about how all that intersects, how all that works together today. And sometimes we're given like more practical lessons on how to speak properly, how to enunciate. We're given lessons on how to preach and how to teach and how to form lesson plans and curriculum and all that kind of thing. But essentially it's a training school, it's a training program.
Okay.
With the benefit that you get a master's at the end.
Well, you hope you get some kind of degree if it's a graduate school, right?
Yeah, but it's much... Maybe I shouldn't say this, but it's much easier than other master's programs, I find.
Okay. And you're saying that comparing to your friends who've been to other... Or your brother and...
I've seen the people in other master's programs. I've seen their level of work, and it doesn't compare.
Is a seminary school denominational?
It can be, and sometimes I guess the famous ones tend to be, but there are many that are not denominational, where anybody can attend.
Mm-hmm.
And typically those are the more expensive ones. But I attended personally a denominational school.
Okay.
Which accepted non-denominational people.
Okay, well, I didn't know that, so that's pretty cool. Oh, just out of curiosity, what denomination was Princeton Seminary?
Princeton is technically part of the PCUSA tradition, the Presbyterian Church USA.
Mm-hmm.
My home church at the time, the church I was attending, was a part of the PCUSA, and so I was able to get a 100% grant.
Oh.
It was one of the special things that Princeton Seminary did. And so I attended for free, and it was worth it, I think. No, but yeah, it was. That's all I can say. It's PCSA school. It accepts people who are not of that tradition.
Oh, okay. How did it compare to going to undergrad at California?
Well, first of all, UC Berkeley, I think it's just different. It's much, much bigger. I know Rutgers here is very big as well, but UC Berkeley was pretty big. We had about 36,000 students total. And the campus is huge. Professors are very professional. And everybody is, you know, everything is laid back in a California style. And it's very different here, especially in Princeton. First of all, there's much fewer people. It's only a few hundred. And the professors, you actually get to talk to them because your classes are much smaller.
Yeah.
And you get to know them. They eat lunch with you. That was shocking to me. These professors are willing to eat lunch with their students. They would have time to do that in the first place. And so that was very shocking. I was also shocked that people actually ask questions in class. if you have a lecture hall of 600, like in California, you don't get to do that often. But here, everybody had a question, everybody was talking, and it was very nice. And you get to have relationships with people who are in different class levels, like seniors, third years, first year, second years. You get to have a conversation with all of them, and you get to be in class with some of them. It was really nice.
And I guess it was a more secluded type of lifestyle going and studying architecture and city planning.
That is also true. So my experience in architecture and city planning, it would be different from most other college students as well. So yeah, it's much less secluded at Princeton. Although
yeah.
It's still relatively secluded in the sense that there's nothing around. There's nothing in that area. Nothing's open late. Nobody's really going around doing anything. So in that sense, it's a little secluded too. But yes, it doesn't compare to the architecture studio seclusion.
Would you say that was one of the reasons that you were pushed towards doing something else?
I don't think anybody really pushed me into ministry, or at least not at first. And actually, many people were trying to push me into city planning and even architecture, even after that experience. So I don't know. I think many people didn't realize how much suffering is involved. But yeah, I don't think that was part of it.
Did you get any valuable experiences from studying city planning and architecture that you apply now in life?
In terms of direct application, not so much. But I do have a much greater appreciation of cities, of their layout, of zoning laws and codes. I have a greater appreciation for architecture and for buildings. And the slight downside is I've gained the critical eye where I could see the flaws in everything. So that's been the slight downside, where I look at a beautiful building and I don't see the beauty, I see the flaws. Or I see a large city, a wonderful city in most aspects. And I would focus on the parts that don't work. On traffic flow, or pedestrian flow, or things like that. So that's a slight downside. And I see that everywhere, so I kind of wish I could turn that off. But in terms of direct applications, in my field, it doesn't really intersect that much.
Okay. This is kind of a silly question, but what city or town have you been to that made you the most annoyed?
There's so many. Okay, I would say Princeton annoys me a lot.
Okay.
In particular because the downtown, where the university and the seminary are located, it's designed specifically so that it's difficult to get to. They purposely made it so that you can't take a large highway or a large street directly into campus. But they made everything small. I understand why they want to keep it as a small neighborhood feel, small town feel. But for me, because I had to go all over the place, I had to travel often, it really infuriated me that it would take me 1 hour 30 minutes to get there when it should have only taken 1 hour.
Oh, wow.
So that was a really, really annoying struggle. And I know why they did that. It's because they want to keep that feel, that small town feel. But for a student, even for a pastor, it's not ideal. And I feel for all the parents who have to go visit their children, especially in graduation time.
Maybe they changed the traffic laws for graduation.
No, they don't. I've been there. They don't.
So I was wondering if you'd say New Brunswick, because it's sometimes it's pretty awful, but I guess not.
New Brunswick is pretty bad too, but Princeton's a different level. New Brunswick, I don't think it's purposefully bad. Princeton is purposefully bad.
Oh, I see.
in my view.
So here's some I guess last more difficult questions.
Okay.
Can you tell me about someone who had a big influence on you and your life, and can you tell me about some of the lessons you learned from them?
There's so many, but I think one of the biggest influences on me was my grandmother. I mentioned before that my parents were both working full-time back in the day, and so I would either be in Korea with family over there, or my grandmother would come to America and take care of me for however long her visa would hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent most of my childhood actually being raised by my grandmother. She was my mother's mother, and she was not very well educated, because she grew up in a time when it cost a lot of money to send someone to school, and she was a part of a big family. Her family couldn't afford to send her, and so she didn't really have the best education. She didn't have the best Korean. She didn't know any English at all. She barely did math. But the thing that struck me so much about her was she would always love me. Like, even when I did something bad, and she got a little angry, but she would never become furious. She would never rage like my parents would rage. No, but she was always loving, and she was always so gentle and so kind. And I think, at her funeral when she passed away, a lot of people said the same thing. So it wasn't just her towards the end of her life, it was her entire life. She was like that. And some of the people were sharing with me that the reason why she is that way, the reason why she was so kind, gentle, loving, is because of her faith. That she was a serious Christian, and I knew this because even up until her death, even until she was lying on a deathbed, the first thing she did in the morning is she would turn on the radio, and she would listen to it was like a radio station that would read the Bible for her.
Oh, okay.
So that was the first thing she did. She would have somebody read the Bible for her. And then she would sing along with songs, with the hymns that were also playing at the same time. And that's what she did for much of her life. She had people read the Bible to her. Sometimes she reads, and then she would sing these hymns, sing these songs. And as a result, her life was so different from many other people.
Yeah.
My other set of grandparents, they were very different. They were also grandparents, you know, they wouldn't want to spoil me, but they were much harsher in a way. I still love them, grandparents, but they were very different. And so that was a big impact on me, is how Christianity, how faith can transform a person's life.
Yeah.
And make them different from everyone else. And how it's only possible to love if you know that you are loved. So that I think that was the biggest lesson for me.
Do you have any regrets?
Regrets? At this point in time, not really. I kind of regret spending all that money going to UC Berkeley, studying city planning and architecture. But at the same time, I don't regret that because I made many memories. I met many wonderful friends. And these are lifelong friends. So I don't think I regret anything. It was all worth it.
That's good. Well, not that I'm implying that you're gonna like die tomorrow or something, but like, how would you like to be remembered?
That's a tricky question. Because I know no matter what I say, people are gonna remember me differently. I guess I would like to be remembered as just a loving person. As someone who loved God and who loved people. That's it.
I think it's simple but good.
It's tricky. It's hard.
Yeah. Okay, last question. Is there anything that you never told me but want to tell me now? We can skip if you want and just end it here.
No, I never thought of that. Let's see. I think of something randomly. Tomomi, you're very bubbly, you're very loving and very kind.
Thank you.
And it's such a pleasure, such a joy to have you as part of our ministry. And I'm looking forward to working together with you while you're still here at school.
Thank
you. Hopefully even later on. I want to keep you at New Brunswick. Yeah, that's it.
I'm very glad that I met you. Mm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank God.
You've helped me in a lot of ways that I don't know how to say well, but
I don't do anything.
No, sure you do. Okay, thank you for listening, and this is Pastor Brian Kim. I don't know how I was supposed to end it, but
that's fine.